as he walks us through his remarkable book, When Love Meets Fear. In the last three sessions, our experience with the themes of this book have nudged us into self-awareness and discovery as we've been working with the ideas here. For our final week, we've read the last three chapters to prepare for resonating with these great themes: becoming more courageous and facing fear, chapter 6, to discover a deeper spiritual receptiveness, chapter 7, and to embrace the meeting ground where fight meets light in the epilogue. So now let's move into that receptive state of mind that's needed for work of this kind. I'm going to read Dave's prayerful affirmation for becoming fearless. And for those of you who would like to read along with me in your book, turn to page Roman numeral 10. I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to show love and to let go of fear. I am thankful for the enduring capacity to love that comes to me from the sacred heart of the universe. May everything that happens to me today open my heart more and more. May all that I think, feel, do, am, express loving kindness toward myself, those close to me, and to all beings. May fearless love be my life purpose, my bliss, my destiny, the richest grace that I can receive or give. And may I always be especially compassionate toward people who are lost in fear or unable to love. And now, if you'd like to switch to your gallery screen, we'll offer our group welcome to Dave to bless the teachings that he brings to us this morning. So, hands up, gallery screen.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks to you, Judy, and Tim, and to Dennis. It's just hard to believe that we've come to the end of our series of talks. And just wanted to say how much I've enjoyed it. And it never really felt like teaching a class. It always felt like joining in with everyone and feeling a presence of yearning for letting go of fear. And I'm just so glad you could all join in with me to do that. It's a lifetime work. But we made a few little inroads through our talks, and mostly through how you've experienced it. So I'm going to begin with doing a screen share. And as usual, I'd like to start with recommending some resources. Both of these are on the website, daverico.com. And the first one is and actually from Word and Life. It's talks I gave on, I think it's maybe two parts, on the Sermon on the Mount. And for that, you go to the free articles section on the main page. And then Dennis has also redone the page of podcasts. And all of this is free, by the way. And if you want to look through my list, these are the former Word and Life programs. And you're welcome to listen to whichever ones fit the bill for you. And today, of course, our topic is how to work with fear from the point of view of our spiritual practices. So I'd like to begin with an affirmation, which kind of pulls it together, states it. And if you can just not have your sound on, but repeat after me aloud in your own space. With an unconditional yes to fear, as a given of life, join to a program not to be stopped or driven by fear, I open to the grace of freedom from the grip of fear. And here we're summarizing our main points. We're accepting that fear is a given of life. We're not putting ourselves down for being afraid at any time. Some of our fears are new, some go all the way back to childhood. But we're pronouncing an unconditional yes to the fact of fear. But we're joining it to a program. And this program, of course, is the I admit that I'm afraid to myself and someone I trust. I allow myself to feel the fear rather than look for a way to avoid it. And then I act as if the fear could not stop or drive me. So we begin with the yes. We join it with the program. In other words, we take some action. And when we do that, it leads to this result. We notice that we're opening ourselves to the grace of freedom from the grip of fear. So it's a combination of effort. This is the effort program, which is admit, allow, active. With the attitude of the unconditional yes, that opens us to the grace, which completes the work. A power greater than our own ego is attracted to the unconditional yes and the perseverance in the program. And this leads to the full freedom from the grip of fear. So this shows you how spirituality works. It begins with the attitude of yes. It continues with the program of action. And then we open to a grace that comes to us that's something more than the work that we've done. This is a good summary of how spirituality works with our psychological program. This is our psychological program, admit, allow, active. This is our spiritual attitude, unconditionally yes to the way things are. Result. A grace, a gift that enables this freedom from fear and expands it so that you feel as if it's happening all by itself. It's no longer just based on your own effort. Something has come into play that's wonderfully congratulating you for the work that you're doing. That grace, of course, is from the Holy Spirit, however you understand that. Okay. Barbara Valentine, would you read this? Jamie?
In the account of Jesus walking on the water, Jesus reassures his frightened disciples Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. Matthew 14:27. When every seemingly external it is seen as one cosmic I, fear can't find a foothold in our lives. Instead, we make a direct connection between spirituality and fearlessness. In other words, once every scary event in life is recognized as giving us yet another opportunity to practice love, fear takes flight and only we remain.
Thank you. So in the Bible story, the disciples see Jesus walking on the water. This scares them because it's so unusual. And he says, take heart. That's the love. Take heart. What heart does he mean? He means his own sacred heart. Take my heart now. And when you have my heart in you, then every it turns into an I. And the result is you're no longer afraid. This is an extremely profound statement. And interestingly enough, when Freud was asked, what's the purpose of your analysis with people? What's the purpose of your therapy? He said, it's so that every it can become an I. Everything that you describe as happening to you from the outside, suddenly you allow it to become part of yourself. You're no longer blaming others. You're looking at your own projections, for instance. So when we take these external happenings in life, which we see as it, and reframing them as part of ourselves and of the whole cosmos, it has a direct result on fear. That fear loses its foothold. And now we've made a direct connection between our spirituality and fearlessness. Or another way of saying it is, every scary event in our lives becomes an opportunity for what? Practicing love and letting go of fear. And the result is the we remain. So I remain once I let go of the it. So if I think of it as it and I eliminate the T, it's I. What I'm dealing with in my life right now has something to do with what's going on with me. I can no longer blame others. I can no longer be afraid of what might happen. Instead, I'm looking at how will I handle what will happen. So I've taken it out of the third person singular, it will happen. I put it into the first person singular, I will handle it. That's how every it turns into an I and emboldens us and strengthens us to face our fears. And this is an entirely spiritual experience because we're making contact with a bigger I than just myself. It's the cosmic I. And if you have questions as we go along, please raise your hand. Now let's take this final phrase, only we remain. In other words, the fear is gone and only we remain. And we're going to look at this affirmation from the book Dune by Frank Herbert, which I think you will relate to. Ann Miller, would you read this for us?
There it goes. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past me, I will turn to see fear's path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. By Frank Herbert.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they would recite this whenever they felt fear. Fear is what destroys us. That's this part. Brings total obliteration. But I'm not going to go there. Instead, I'm going to face my fear. That's the admit that you have the fear. Then I will permit it to pass over me and through me. That's our second A, allow me myself to feel the fear. Then when it has gone by me, I notice that only I will remain. That's what we just talked about. The it has become I. How does the it become I? By facing it directly and permitting it to pass over me and through me. And then I'm going to turn and notice that fear is gone, but I remain. And I have this one in the book, so I do recommend it when you feel fear. Vivian, can you hear me? Could you read us this little section right here?
A recurrent theme in our book is that we free ourselves from fear by acting with love, the opposite of fear. Consider the poem Outwitted by Edwin Markham. He drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. At first, they feared me, so they drew a circle to shut me out. Then their fear looked for a negative label, heretic, rebel. They do not integrate. Do not let me in. They flout me. They mock me and push me out of this circle. But love from me turns it around. An unconditional responsiveness of love towards those who hate me.
Thank you, Vivian. Who hate me, reject me, don't like me. So now we're looking into this, our topic from the other point of view, from, you know, people toward us. Some people shut us out or reject us or judge us. And remember that most likely this comes from some kind of fear of you. And then their fear, the fear led to the negative judgments about you. And they're not letting you in. They're pushing you outside their circle. These are the people who hate or hurt you, or who don't like you, who reject you, who push you away, even when you offer such sincere love. But look, our work spiritually is not to turn against them because they've turned against us, but we respond with love and without judgment. Love from us turns it around internally. So now you have a different feeling. You feel an unconditional responsiveness toward them. And when you feel this, their rejection of you and their judgment of you no longer hits you so hard. It no longer triggers you into feeling like an outsider. Now let's look carefully at what we're saying. Instead of turning against or away from those who have turned away from us, we turn our hearts toward them. This is happening internally. They may not want to see us. We're not going to transgress the limits that they've set up. We're going to honor the fact that they don't like us. They don't want to see us. We're going to not do something about that. But a heartful change is happening in us. And, oh, they must need more love. So that's what I'm going to give them internally. So I'm going to draw my own circle and picture them in it. This is the Buddhist practice of loving kindness. That each day you think of the people you love and beam love to them. And you people think of the people who don't love you and you beam love to them too. We drew a circle that took him in. This is a wonderful example of a spiritual approach. You don't find this in a Psychology 101 book.
Dave?
Yeah.
We have a question, if you're open to that.
Go ahead.
From Jack. Jack, why don't you unmute?
Okay. Hi, I'm unmuted. Hi, Dave. I'm sorry, I don't know how to raise my hand here. I can't find the icon.
No, that's okay.
All right. On it, you know, it's a bit dated now, but on a previous slide, you had mentioned love versus fear, and you said that every fear is an opportunity to love. And I wanted to know what that love looks like in a practical sense. I understand it in this slide with regards to other people in the face of poor behavior or animosity or aggression that we don't resist that. But previously, what does that love look like as an opportunity when fear rears its head?
That every time you feel a fear, you would tack onto it the word opportunity. What, since fear is an exclusion and love is inclusion, you are tacking on the new extension of the definition of fear, fear as opportunity. What can I now include rather than exclude, run away from, or hit back in a retaliatory way? So for instance, it's scary to see that some people shut me out and judge me, especially if in childhood, when you were judged as doing wrong, you were abused in some way or too severely punished for it. So a fear comes up that hooks back into childhood. But when you open to love, it gives you a new wisdom. That's the wit that love and I have the wit to win. A new wisdom comes in that says, wait a minute. Instead of turning against those who have turned against me, I would like to draw my own circle of loving kindness and bring them into it. And you do this as an internal spiritual practice. You don't have to say something to the people who don't like you or who have judged you.
Thank you. And to me, what this also invokes is courage, right? That it takes tremendous courage. And that courage to me is part of the love. And it also, as a psychologist, you know, it invokes exposure therapy also, that in therapy, we expose ourselves to our fears and habituate to them and move through them instead of moving away from the fear.
Very good way to put it. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, Adam, are we able to hear you now? We couldn't hear you last week.
I think so.
Oh, good. Okay. Would you read us this? So now I'm expanding on what we just talked about.
The teaching of Jesus proposes a radical reversal of our primitive impulse toward revenge. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. This is a challenging alternative to do as you've been done by. But then, love was, is, and always be about breaking down the walls of ego, whose favorite sport is retaliation. As I choose reconciliation instead, I am spiritually on the track, and graces of fearlessness flow in.
Thank you, Adam. So once again, you see the connection. As I make the choice, as I act in favor of reconciliation rather than in favor of retaliation, when I make that kind of a choice, I can trust that the grace of courage that Jack mentioned, the graces of fearlessness, flow in. Our spiritual practices invite the graces. And the graces give us the strength to continually upgrade our practices so that they're more and more effective. I'm a great believer in this. That when you make this kind of a choice, a radical reversal of your primitive impulses. What are these primitive impulses? They're the ones we inherited from our cave people ancestry. And one of them is hurt those who hurt you. But somebody came along, not only Jesus in this instance, and said, no, here's an alternative. You can love your enemies instead of hating them. You can do good to those who hate you instead of do evil to those who hate you. You can bless those who curse you rather than curse them back. And you can pray for those who abuse you rather than curse and hope that the worst possible thing might happen to them. And of course, the ego has absolutely no motivation to follow this kind of a teaching. You would only do this if you so totally believed that this is a new way of living and it's appealing to me. And once you do make a choice like that, graces will flow in that help you accomplish it. This is what it means to believe that there's such a thing as spirituality. And by the way, it isn't just Jesus. It's Gandhi, Dalai Lama, St. Francis, Martin Luther King, Buddha. All through the ages, people have come along who have proposed a radical alternative. Alternative to what? To that automatic instinct that wants us to get back at people. And of course, I'm directly connecting it to ego, the part of us that needs to be right, needs to win, and whose favorite sport is retaliation. This is yet another big challenge. But I've noticed that the more I make the kinds of choices that lead to reconciliation, the better I feel about myself. So it even helps you in your self-esteem. Questions about this? Okay. So I'm going to end the screen sharing, but first, before I do, I'll just do a, I want to come back once more to this from Frank Herbert. So once I get it, that fear is the equivalent of my own self-destruction, I want to face my fear rather than let it take over. I will permit it to happen to me, and then I will turn around and notice that fear goes when I let it go past me and through me, and that I remain. This I that remains is not the I of ego. This is the other I that we talked about. This is the this I right here. Take heart. It is I. Or another way of daring to say it is, once I get it that fear is part of myself, I handle it with a new way of operating. I pay attention to it. I hold it in some kind of loving way instead of judgmental or negative way. I appreciate the opportunity that it's offering me. I accept it as part of life, and I allow it to pass over me and through me. And of course, these five A's are what we mean by love. It isn't make nice. It's fervent attention, sincere affection, continual appreciation, unconditional acceptance, and free allowing. So when I turn these five toward all my feelings, I have taken heart, and it has become I. Result, no longer afraid. Okay, questions or ideas about any of this? Okay, well, our time has come for our breakout rooms, and then I will be back, and we will pick it up from there. I'm so glad we had a chance to go through all this.
Dave, is there a prompt for the groups that you'd like to throw out there I can put in the chat for everyone?
Yes. My question is, how can I let it be okay that I still have fear? How can I let it be okay that I still have fear? Because only when it's okay will you be willing to admit it, allow it, and act as if it could no longer stop or drive you.
Wonderful, thanks. All right, friends, we've got about 20 minutes to spend in our breakout rooms. You should have either 4 or 5 folks, depending on the algorithm and how it works out and who decides to go into their breakout rooms. It could be 3, but we really want to keep it around 4 so that everyone has about 5 minutes to share if possible. So they are going to be opening shortly. Just accept your invitation, and I will call y'all back here around 11:05 for about 25 more minutes of conversation with Dave. Enjoy.
I was just afraid that maybe when I talked about it is I, it might not have been as clear as it could be. What I mean is anything human is part of ourselves, and it's human to feel fear. Therefore, fear is not something external, it's internal, it's in us. And it's okay that it's in us, because anything that's in us must be there for a good reason. And the reason is to alert us to danger. I also remembered a line from a poem by Terence, an ancient Roman poet, who said, "Nothing human is alien from me." In other words, anything that can happen to humans can happen to me. That's the ultimate unconditional yes to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so our theme throughout our series has been, don't judge yourself for having fear or being afraid. Accept it as part of who you are and who humans are, and engage in the program, admit, allow, act as if, and the result will be the grace of courage. So, questions or any comments about something that came up in your breakout rooms? Pat?
Yes. In our breakout room toward the end, an extraordinarily helpful insight emerged that I just like to put on the table for all of us. It was the concept of breath, of the great whoosh, you know, inspirational breath of God. But I took it to mean also a use within our own bodies, within our own minds, of taking that deep breath, just slowing the whole thing down and breathing out, that allows us just enough, at least me, just enough distance from the sting of what's going on, so that maybe I've got some kind of a chance to engage this wonderful program that you're sharing with us today. So breath is a great enabler there, and I'm grateful for that.
Thank you, Pat. I think we can all relate to that. Barbara Valentine?
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Barbara.
Good to see you. We had the same thought. I was thinking how taking that pause between the trigger and the reaction is so helpful, because we're just so, it's so ingrained in our amygdala that we're triggered and we react for self-preservation, and it's hard to slow that down sometimes. But like Pat said, the breath, or just taking that pause to think for a second before we react, so that it's more reconciliation than retaliatory. So yes. same Pat.
As often.
Good. Thank you, Barbara. And of course, the movement toward reconciliation as opposed to retaliation relates directly to the letting go of fear. Because what you're saying in fear is push it away. And what you're saying in reconciliation is bring it in. That's how it helps us release ourselves from fear. Somebody else had a question?
Curia, yeah, okay, I see you in there.
So glad I figured out how to get my camera to work so I can feel like I'm part of the group. I am just so grateful. First of all, Dave, with your explanation of bringing the spiritual in with the psychological and the way to grace, somehow through this course, it's like I'm less identified with my fear. I used to just be fear and so ashamed of it. And somehow with what I've experienced here with your teaching and this group, it's allowed me to feel more objective. And I know the brain science about amygdala and shutting down PFC and all that. I know all that, but I have not been able to really apply it to myself because I've been too identified with my fear. So today's session, what you've shared in the teaching session and the breakout room is just, it's just washing over me, gushing through me with hope. And I can't wait to see what evolves. And my gratitude to everyone here. Thank you.
Thank you, Taria. Appreciate it. And yeah, we're not identifying with our fear, which would mean I have not remained. There's nothing left of me but fear. And it drives me to do things or stops me from doing other things. That's identifying with fear. What we're doing is identifying fear as part of ourselves, totally normal, and using a program to handle it. That's the difference between identifying with fear and identifying fear in us. The program is what makes the difference. Okay, Yolanda?
I was just curious. I had heard that it is said in the Bible 365 times. I have not counted, but it says there a lot of times, do not be afraid, fear not, you know, things like that. Can anybody verify whether it's really 365 times for each day of the year?
As far as I can tell, Michelle, that is pretty accurate, the 365. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Kind of coincidental there, yeah.
Oh, Tim, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I just was saying that it's coincidentally that like the same amount of days that there are in a year. Yeah.
Number of days in the year.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thank you. I guess this question came up for me in our group, and it has to do with boundaries, and if I don't have particularly good boundaries and have a history of allowing myself to be in a family relationship that feels abusive to me, seems abusive to me, is it's a chicken and egg situation. I don't know where the harm or the hurt or the wound started, but it's been perpetuated, and so we are adversaries. And my experience has been when I try to let down my walls or invite her into the circle, I am re-wounded. So this healing and this spiritual practice, the program, is all internal and doesn't involve my actual ego's desire to make it change in the real world, to notice the terminology, make it change, because it's not in my power. All I can do is work on myself. Is that, I do you understand?
Yes, you've
my question?
Understood it very well. Yeah, it won't be up to us to be sure change happens, but we're doing everything that we can to create the conditions in which change can happen. So if you look at it that way, and secondly, if you continually reach out to someone who continually rejects you, after a while it becomes you're not really respecting that person's choice, even though it's not a choice that you think is the right one. And so that's when we switch to the internal loving and internal reconciliation. And we're sorry that it isn't happening externally. But we're doing whatever, we're continuing to hold that person in our circle of love and prayer. And we're going to be satisfied with that as the result, rather than the only result that I'll be satisfied with is if the other person lets me back into her circle. Mm. So we're expanding our circle, and we're hoping that the other person expands his or her circle, but we can't make it happen.
Thank you.
So at a certain point, we're saying yes to the way it is, the kind of a yes that is not going along with what is divisive, but a yes to the fact that some humans choose divisiveness. And I don't want to be one of them, but I want to hold them with compassion and respect the limits that they've set.
May I ask a further related question?
Yeah, go ahead.
That has to do with the fact that I am coming out of denial in realizing that in my woundedness and my defensiveness, I've constructed a self that has rejected and hurt this other person. So in a kind of 12-step modality, I have this impulse as I realize my wrongdoings and see them, because it's been a two-way street, that I want to make amends in some way, but it doesn't feel safe to make amends while I'm doing this internal work and this other person apparently has no interest in this kind of either spiritual or psychological work. So just, I don't know what the question is, but that's, it's not, it doesn't feel safe to make amends directly, but again, I work internally, I understand.
Yeah, and you do need to respect the timing when it comes to making amends, because it has to be when the other person is ready. You have become, if you look at it this way, I have become the prayerful witness. I am now the prayerful witness of what's happening in my family. I am not the change agent.
Okay.
And if you don't want to use the word prayerfully, you could say the caring witness, the loving witness, the affirming witness. And when there's an openness for the amends, that's when you'll make them. Meanwhile, you'll just hold them in your own heart. So everybody get this, that there are times in life when you can only be the witness, not the one who makes things different.
Thank you.
And again, we're trusting that there's something about the prayerful witnessing of what's happening, which also refers to the events in the news, prayerful witnessing to the news, instead of just listening, that somehow that will lead to a change if there's if there are more and more people who are affirming it that way. Mm. We're trusting that the Holy Spirit could work like that. Holy Spirit, a power in the universe that is always moving toward connection rather than division.
Mm. Sylvie, I saw that a while ago you had your hand up. Would you like to go still? Or?
Sure. Hi. It was more about in our break room, we were five, and there was five countries represented with all different accents and different time zones. And I was reminded that we're all in a, all together, and we're on a life journey. So that was pretty, I don't know, it was rich on the side of what was given in this class.
And of course, you notice that. That's a wonderful quality to have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carl or Ann?
Along the lines of how you were speaking about listening, in our breakout, we had noticed that a lot of the iconography within chapels, there's a lot of push and pull within the religion that we may have been brought up in, where there fear is used a lot, and the pull. Well, in the iconography of pictures of the hell fires and talks of this kind of thing. And yet there are the great seers that you've spoken of, Dave, the Saint Francis and the Buddha and Jesus, of course, and saying to fear not. It's just there's those two things that are happening together, and we were noticing that in the breakout. We didn't come to much of the conclusions, but whatever you could shed light on.
Yeah, the iconography, I suppose, is meant to bring up fear of punishment if you make choices that are contrary to whatever the religion teaches. And you really want to ask yourself, if I believe that the high path of a human is to let go of retaliation in favor of reconciliation, how could I believe that there's a God who isn't as highly conscious as was Buddha, St. Francis, Martin Luther King, and so forth? You want to ask yourself, if you're still carrying around the belief in some type of horrible punishment that's waiting for you after death, you're definitely holding on to a fear that you don't have to keep carrying. And that's the whole point of the Sacred Heart, that it's mercy, as Thomas Merton says, God is mercy upon mercy. So you want to ask yourself, if even your vision of God has been influenced by fear rather than love. Because the Bible doesn't say God is fear, it says God is love. And of course, in many traditions, there's the idea of the eternal torture. And you want to ask yourself, do I still want to believe that?
Yes, thank you. Sometimes it's taught early in one's religious life to kids, the idea of the fears to beware of, and what you said helps to balance that out.
Okay, is there another question?
Dave, someone in the chat is wondering if
hi, Barbara Berger, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to say one of
the person who put in the chat.
No, I'm different.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't we go with you and then the other person? Go
ahead. Okay. In our chat room, one of the things we brought up, in the group session, was about the fear of aging and being able to take care of ourselves and, not being able to use our hands, for instance, anymore or whatever. And I suppose most of us feel that way at this point. We're all starting to age. And what kind of fear is that?
It's the fear of the given of aging and changing.
Yeah.
So every time you say yes to the central Buddhist teaching, which is impermanence, nothing lasts permanently in our mortal world. Obviously, if it's mortal, that means it's coming to an end. And as it comes closer to the end, it's you have fewer and fewer of the powers that you used to have. As I accept that as part of being human, as I look at it as an acceptance witness, as opposed to someone who's going to be kicking and screaming and fighting the inevitable, I'm going to have a much happier life. Going back to the quote from Terence, nothing human is alien from me. Part of being human is getting old and ultimately dying. And when I have made peace with that as the acceptant witness, I hold it in a way that makes it more doable. So that's what we're shooting for. Okay, now if someone in the chat had a question, we can make this our final question. Tim, do you want to tell me what the question is?
It wasn't actually a question. It was a wondering, a curiosity from someone if you might end with a poem today.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no problem. Anybody else have questions?
See, okay. David's hand up.
One final one, Dave.
Yeah, just a comment on the impermanence. I'm curious if people think love is the exception of impermanence.
If love is what?
It's the exception to impermanence. Love doesn't actually go.
Oh, away. I see what you mean. Yes, the impermanent refers to mortal things, whereas love is immortal, and so it doesn't end. Well, I would like to end with the poem that we've already been looking at, but I also want to say just before we end how much I really loved being with you guys, and I'm just so glad I can share. And I hope what I've said and what we've heard from each other will make a difference. So let's go back to our poem that we read before. He drew a circle to shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and brought him in. Thank you all.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pat, would you like to come back and close us out here?
Thank you. My Zoom signal is just a little shaky. I hope this all comes through unfrozen. But it gives me a chance to remember that this book had a real impact on the culture 25 years ago at that time. And it's a boon that today's much more fear-ridden culture has prompted Paula's Press to reissue it. With every chapter of the book rewritten and revised, because today's world needs it even more to admit, to allow, to act as if. So thank you, Dave, for your masterful guidance and sharing. How fortunate we've been to be able to sit down and experience some of these life-changing excursions into our own psyches and spirits, and to benefit from your shepherding that somehow always manages to deliver us to some sense of deeper presence. We thank you, and we thank bless you. And now back to Judith for final words, and then we will all clap like mad and shout goodbye in our gallery.
Yes, we want to say goodbye into the fall. We'll have a program beginning in the fall, and we will let you know what it is. We don't know yet. We're in the process of discerning what that will be. Word and Life will begin in the fall again. And of course, we will have Dave next May after a new book comes out of his prolific brain. All right, let's unmute and say thanks to Dave, and thanks. You know, that breakout room that had five countries represented with five different accents. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
All right. Thanks for letting us know that. Goodbye, everybody. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
That's it.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, all. And Shana, yes, I think your question in the chat is correct. You will know next time.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah.
Thanks again, all.
We'll see you all.
Thank you.
Great to be with you.
Good
to be with you.
Go down here to leave.
Thanks, Dave.